Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. This time on the EMID podcast, it is another two-part series, with this time Dr. Sandra Gumpf being interviewed by Patrick Bafuma. Dr. Gumpf is someone you may have heard of before with Gumpf's ID Pearls, and this has been around for around 20 years where she's been an ID specialist and educator. There's a lot of interesting information here. I apologize that the audio quality is not quite as good as would be desired, but it is still well worth listening to this because it's full of great information. So let's go right into it.
I have with me Dr. Sandra Gumpf, and wanted to talk to you a little bit today about asymptomatic bacteriuria. And so I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit about what your thoughts on it were from the infectious disease perspective.
Sure.
I work in a lot of the callbacks tend to get pinned on me in the ER, and as I'm sure you're probably all well too aware, we do, if you sneeze the wrong way, we'll do a urine on you. If you've got any nondescript belly pain, we'll do a urine and a culture on you. And so then I tend to get like this pile of callbacks, and some of them are just completely unrelated to their complaint. And so some of them, though, that we get, I'll grow out like these weird bugs. Like some of them will be Klebsiella or Enterobacter, and I'm trying to sort out what I do with this. So, what should I be doing with them, and what would you consider symptomatic?
All right, if the person, it depends on what they came in. You're right. If it's something that seems entirely unrelated to the reason the patient came in for, it may be a red herring, but there are some things that you should look out for. So, for example, you have blood cultures that come back positive. What to do with that? First of all, if it's a gram-negative bacillus or a Staph aureus or an Enterococcus, that's something you need to look into a little bit further, even if that patient is asymptomatic. So if somebody came in with a gram-negative bacillus in the blood and they did not come in with UTI or pyelonephritis where that readily explains that, that patient may actually have an occult focus of infection. And that's somebody that I would definitely call back for further evaluation and possibly admission. Let's say you have a blood culture that comes back with a gram-negative bacillus, and the patient did come in for dysuria or pyelonephritis symptoms. That person, we used to insist to that the patient needed to come back in and needed to have repeat blood cultures to make sure they cleared. That type of person, if the organism in the urine is the same as the organism in the blood, and you know that it's susceptible to the antibiotics that were prescribed in the emergency room, patient is doing well, they're improving, then really you don't need to do anything further with that. Just let the patient complete their course of therapy, and they don't need any further retesting or treatment. The urinary tract is a drainable focus, and it should the infection should respond very quickly. They should clear. As long as the patient's doing better, they should be fine. Urine cultures, maybe that you have come back for callbacks, maybe. If there's the only organism that I really am concerned in the urine where you might need to consider a bloodstream infection or an occult infection would be Staph aureus, especially if the patient does not have a bladder catheter. Generally, you do not see Staph aureus in the urine unless there's a bladder catheter. So in that kind of situation, you want to ask the patient how they're doing. Are they having any fevers? They may need to be reevaluated. Definitely follow up that patient's blood culture and make sure that it's not positive for Staph aureus.
Two things along those lines. One is that we're not necessarily always doing blood cultures on some of these patients. And maybe they say that they've got a little bit of back pain and they've maybe got you've got a UTI, but then it grows out Staph aureus and we didn't really do blood cultures on that patient and sent them home because they were well appearing. So on one hand, what do you do if you don't have blood cultures? And the add-on is you call that patient back, they had Staph aureus in the urine, but it was sensitive to Bactrim, and now they're feeling okay. what is the appropriate follow-up for that?
Yeah, so that person, he's doing better. What it may have been something else. Maybe that was a contaminant, an external contaminant. If they're doing clinically better, that patient is unlikely to have something like endocarditis. They're not having fevers. I wouldn't do a blood culture on that patient. I'd just say, look out for having this infection again in the future, or look out for any fevers that pop up. You might need to be reevaluated by your doctor. That kind of patient, I don't think that there would be a significant risk of an occult infection in that patient, a disseminated infection or a hematogenous infection.
Okay. Now, what about looking, you mentioned gram-negative bacilli. What about those in particular is concerning to you? Enterobacter is something that I'll see more commonly in Staph aureus, and pseudomonal once in a while. Where else are you looking, I guess, these grow out, or can it just sort of be any sort of deep space infection?
The patient that comes back with a gram-negative bacillus of any kind, really, that where you did not have evidence of a UTI or a suspicion of a UTI or pyelonephritis, that patient may have some other occult deep space infection. It could be, sometimes we've found discitis on that type of patient, or even some underlying gastrointestinal malignancy or issue, or perhaps they have liver disease or something like that. That's the kind of thing that we'd be looking for. If there's blood, if there's a gram-negative rod in the blood and there are UTI symptoms, that's pretty classic for UTI related. That's a kidney infection. Anything else is something that you would want to evaluate further.
What about for strep in the urine? Once in a while we'll get strep. Is that tend to be a contaminant? What are your thoughts with strep in the on a UA?
Very often they are contaminants in your older patients, maybe patients with indwelling catheters, more immunosuppressed. They might cause UTIs. I would go by symptoms. If the patient has suprapubic tenderness or back pain or nausea, anything else that might suggest a UTI, I might treat that patient. We see a lot of aerococcus now that used to be strep, usually reported as a strep. Mm-hmm. And a few of those patients do actually have symptoms and we treat them.
How about for men? Is there a difference between treating an asymptomatic male versus an asymptomatic female?
Really, no. You know, men, they tend to have, in terms of UTIs, when they're symptomatic with a UTI, they tend to have more complicated infections. But asymptomatic bacteriuria is very common in both men and women, especially starting in our late 30s, 40s, 50s. The older we get, the more likely we are to have bacteria or pyuria in the urine, and it's not really doing anything. We don't necessarily treat that any differently, depending on gender. The issue is when patients actually have a UTI. Let me go back and talk a little bit about asymptomatic bacteriuria, because we see that a lot, and we get a lot of questions about, is this asymptomatic bacteria or is this a UTI? We do electronic consults at RVA, and mm-hmm. we get lots of referrals for that. So basically, if the patient has no UTI symptoms, they don't have UTI, it's asymptomatic bacteria. I wouldn't even call. I don't recommend even culturing those patients unless they have UTI symptoms. Usually, treating asymptomatic bacteriuria may clear bacteria temporarily. They'll come back, and antibiotics can't sterilize the urine. They can only kill actively replicating bacteria. Treating it doesn't reduce the likelihood of developing a UTI. Doesn't reduce morbidity or mortality related to the UTI. It does, however, significantly increase adverse reactions like allergies and C. difficile, definitely resistance. Bacteria have this funny way of adapting by turning on their resistance genes. When you give antibiotics, especially if they're in that colonization state where they're not actively replicating, they're just sort of hanging around, they just become more resistant. And then the more and more you test and treat, these patients just, you can just follow the cultures along and the medical record and see the antibiotic classes falling off over time. And that's the time that they wind up getting to me. And then I have to figure out what to do. We don't do tests of cure anymore for that reason. We don't recommend a screening for UTI with urinalysis and culture because it really doesn't make any difference whatsoever. There are only two situations where treating asymptomatic bacteriuria are important. And the first one is in pregnant women. OBGYNs will do that routinely. And the reason for that is because it reduces the incidence of complications, the incidence of preterm labor. For the second situation is when patients are going to undergo a urologic procedure where they're going to have some mucosal bleeding. There's going to be some injury to the mucosa where they can actually translocate bacteria. Those patients may actually develop sepsis. We recommend both screening, but if you don't have time to do screening before the procedure, we recommend preoperative antibiotics for that.
So this is, I think, a little off topic, and I've always been curious if this is specific just to the institutions I've been at, but I've seen it at more than one site where urology, when they are going to do instrument for stones, is they've asked for a single dose of gentamicin perioperatively, which sort of a single dose seems a bit odd for me, giving a single dose of one agent and then discharging them on something separate. Is that, is there something in guidelines for that, or is it just sort of a local culture? What's your take on something to that?
Yeah, I think it depends on the institution and the urologists. For us, we our urologists generally do gentamicin. There are American Urologic Society guidelines for pre-procedure antibiotics. I would recommend aminoglycosides. I think very rapidly bactericidal. They get high levels in the urine. If you give a higher dose, it can actually cover you for about 24 hours. Okay. There's the once daily dosing of aminoglycosides. We usually do like 5 to 7 milligrams per kilo.
Some sites also reflex everything to culture. Some sites only do it when they're asked. But I always kind of wonder if this skews your local antibiogram and if some places should just have like a, this is the outpatient who was discharged and these are our inpatient antibiograms. Do you see a value for culturing everyone in terms of what to give on the outside and what to give on the inside? What are your thoughts there?
I think I would separate. If you're out in an outpatient clinic, your antibiogram is probably going to differ from the antibiogram of patients in coming to the emergency room in your hospital. So, and it may actually differ between hospitals. I would focus on the patients who are coming in through the emergency room and the inpatient setting. I think those would be the most useful. As far as doing routine cultures, I would probably focus on the patients who are more symptomatic. For example, your average young woman who is relatively healthy, doesn't have recurrent UTIs, she probably will not have something resistant, and you would be fine, I think, treating her empirically without a culture. Very low risk of failure in that setting, and you probably save her a bit of a copay for lab work. I think the antibiogram is more important in those patients who are more likely to be more complicated, like older women with UTI, men with UTI. That's where I think the value lies. Because really, those are the patients who you need to know what they're most likely to have. Those are the patients who are a higher risk of failure or having complications from an undertreated UTI.
Are you ever considering augmenting your treatment either with NSAIDs or with pyridium?
I usually don't give either. UTIs should respond quickly, so I really want to know if they're not having symptoms by the next day. Or if they are having symptoms by the next day, I want to know if they're still having pain, if they're still having dysuria, if they're still having fever. So I usually don't advise it. If anything, I mean, acetaminophen the first day, they're having a lot of back pain. I tend to avoid nonsteroidals anyway.
So in terms of response to treatment here, looking at 24 to 36 hours of antibiotics for cellulitis probably isn't doing much, at least if you're just looking at the erythema, whereas for like a pilo, you're seeing some clinical improvement within 24 hours?
Yeah, definitely. If the patient's not getting better by the next day, I want to know about that. I want to make sure that we're not masking anything.
Moving on to indwelling Foleys, is everyone just colonized, or are there patients who, if you run a culture, that you may actually come up empty-handed?
I would say that's pretty rare. Indwelling bladder catheters become colonized within a few days on a routine basis. Even with the best care, it's very, very hard to keep an indwelling Foley from becoming colonized. I rarely have seen maybe the first day that they have their catheter in, and they haven't had a catheter in before. They might come back with a clean urine, but I seriously haven't.
And we're talking about the patient with a chronic catheter, not the person who came in for urinary retention. Is that correct? Or
that depends. I mean, yeah, the catheter within the first day, you're not likely to have your catheter colonized.
Okay.
You have a new catheter. You've never had a catheter before, so you're not likely to be colonized. You may have asymptomatic bacteriuria, but okay, it's not likely to be coming from the catheter at that point. 3 days later, yeah, you probably were starting to get some colonization.
Sure, this is probably something you've never seen before. The an elderly 80, 90-year-old person who's a little bit weak, but the, you know, the UTIs maybe plus one Lukes, maybe it's 5 to 10 WBCs, but she's declining a little bit, and maybe she's a little bit more forgetful. I'm sure this person gets admitted all the time nationally. What do we do?
Yeah, we get quite a few questions, especially when you're caring for a parent. It's very hard to realize how much they need, and are they sick or are they not? And it's hard for us to tell because we don't even know them. I would say, you know, delirium is a symptom of infection in the elderly,
okay,
especially the demented elderly. So, and of infections, UTI is one of the more likely. However, if she's not really that sick, if it's something more chronic, I would favor trying hydration. I would favor making sure that they're not constipated, because they forget to drink and eat. If mom has declined fairly acutely in the last few days, I think it's reasonable to screen for a UTI. You know, she may not have developed a fever, but if she doesn't have any other reasons to have an infection, if she doesn't have a URI, she doesn't have a respiratory infection, then I think it's reasonable to check for a UTI. Those are the patients who are more likely to have complications when you send them home, or caregiver's not sure how to treat them, or they may not. My mother used to spit out medications. That's the tenuous patient who it's not unreasonable to admit, at least for OBS, and make sure that they're going to be doing okay and they're not having fevers and they're going to be taking their pills.
Or even doing like a dose or two of antibiotics, and sort of as a litmus test to see if they perk up.
That wraps up this podcast. Be sure to check back next week, where there's going to be Dr. Sandra Gumpf, Patrick Bufuma, and discussing a little more about infectious disease. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.